will become a habit. Like a green light means go. Fear should mean go. Until it becomes a second nature to move to the fear. That's where your growth's at. Oh man, I'm just not made up for sales. I'm scared. Okay. So my 4-year-old's scared. Okay. She believes in witches. My baby, you got a witch back there, huh? Wow. That's a trip, dog. What's the witch look like? And she's doing this to scare herself, right? I don't know why she's doing it. I know this. She better move toward her fear. She better go over there and squash the witch, or she's not going to get what she wants in her life. And even if somebody gives her everything she wanted, she'll end up losing it because she's scared. You could even start your day by asking, who do I fear calling today? What do I fear doing the most today? And then do it. The answer should give you the direction. What you're scared of, what you're most scared of, what you don't want to do is typically the thing you most need to do. Sounds simple, but it's hard. Taking action on those things you fear is how you build courage. Courage is an exercise in action. It's not a trait. It's not a characteristic. Oh, he's really a courageous person. Dude, that's an action. That's not a trait. It's not a characteristic. It's not a personality type. People aren't courageous. People are and operate with courage. They do scary things. Everyone has the ability to be courageous. Everyone, even a scared person, everyone has the ability to be courageous. But you have to take action. Do this and you will get to a point where you start looking around for more and more things to do that you fear. Because, hey, look, doing them is actually a lot of fun. And there's payoff in both the confidence and the success. It doesn't really matter how scared I am of it. Oh, man, I'm scared to get a new phone, man. If I get a new phone, I might have to learn a bunch of stuff, you know. I mean, fear can come in little tiny amounts or it could be big, big, ferocious amounts. You know, when I turned 45, I was 45 years old, actually. My wife, who was my fiance at the time, actually. I'd finally, after 13 months, got her to go out with me. And then, yeah, she slept with me, yeah. And then I said, how about us hooking it up? You know, we spend the rest of our life together. And I convinced her to marry me. She thought it'd be a surprise by taking me skydiving on my 45th birthday. She's like, okay, I'm picking you up today. A year before that, she wouldn't even go out with me. Now she's taking, you know, she's spending thousands of dollars to take me skydiving, but she won't tell me she's going to take me out on this trip. And she had already at that time jumped 3 times and she thought this was a big deal. She jumped 3 different times in her life and she's trying to scare me. She's so excited because she is certain that I'm going to freak. Okay. She's waiting for me to freak out in the plane. We're putting on the uniform. I'm not freaking out. We get there. I don't freak out. I'm like, yeah, let's jump. I never jumped before. I don't know why. It just didn't scare me. We're in the plane. I didn't get scared. You know, I didn't know the first thing about jumping. She wanted me to be scared. She wanted to see me terrified. Was I scared? I mean, I guess I was scared, but it wasn't the thing I was most scared of. And I kept telling myself, you know what? Dude, you can get overwhelmed if you want. But if this chute don't open, I mean, we're up in the plane. We're up at 10,000, 12,000 feet. And I'm thinking, I tell myself, you want to get scared? You can get scared, but it's not going to open the chute. Chute's going to open or it's not going to open. Fear will not make this landing any softer. You're going to bounce, dog. You're going to bounce. You won't even know it. Was I scared? Sure. I had some level of fear, I'm sure. But getting overwhelmed won't open my chute. I just kept telling myself, you know, the hardest part of me jumping out of that plane was actually watching her jump. She jumped with a guy on her back. Like, damn, what's he doing on her back? But just kidding, baby. The hardest part of that whole trip was watching her jump and realizing I couldn't help her. That's what scared me the most. Look, being scared is not going to open your chute, folks. Being scared is not going to make you successful. Being scared is going to keep you immobilized. Do the things you're scared of. Overcome them. Build confidence. Build courage. I remember, again, being on that plane. I looked over and saw my beautiful, confident fiance, my wife. Fiance. Is that what they're called? Fiance. My wife, who was about to be my wife, by the side, looking at me. She's waiting for me to show this fear. She's so disappointed that I'm not scared, but I refused to give it to her. I gave her this look that I suggested. I ain't scared of nothing. Even though I was a little scared, you know, she reached over to see me. My heart was pounding. She's like, let me feel your heart. She was so disappointed that I wasn't freaked out. And again, she didn't know it, but when I really got freaked was when she jumped and I couldn't help her. I really got it, man, how important it is when I was watching her jump that it is for people to overcome their fear, to know, hey, man, everything's going to be all right at the end of the day, but I got to go for it. Now, rather than you getting up in a plane and jumping out of a plane, you don't have to do that. You know, I see people go do these zip contests and they go do all these things that Man, just call somebody. Call somebody you're scared of. Get in front of a customer. I refuse in my life to be paralyzed by fear. I was telling the guy in my office this morning, dude, I got this much time left in my life. I refuse to not be who I am and not do what I want to do and not go for it. I refuse to. I refuse to be a slave. I refuse to be a slave of fear. I refuse to be immobilized. I refuse to let fear master me. These are some great affirmations. I refuse instead to be immobilized, but instead I'm going to use fear to take action. I'm going to roll out of the plane. I'm going to jump. I'm going to call the customer. I'm going to go meet that person. It was the decision I made to say, hey, I'm going to use fear in my life that's allowed me to start operating with more courage in my life. I'm not any different than you. Not to mention the fact that my girl jumped. Hey, man, what am I going to do now? I can't like stay in the plane. I got to jump, right? So now you got to. Sometimes when you take time out of it, do it. You don't have a chance. You don't have a choice. And that's a great possibility with fear. Take time out. The fear won't get as big. Fear in your sales career and in your life should be an indicator and a motivator of what you need to do and must do, and just do it as quickly as possible. Overcoming the fear is just an exercise in doing the things that will allow you to increase confidence in yourself and take your career to the next level. Handling fear is merely a decision. Like, you got to decide, dude, I'm going to be the master of fear. So start building up this habit of identifying what you fear doing, who you fear calling, and attacking those areas. Make those first little actions. I assure you, you will quickly build confidence that is so critical for your sales business, your sales profession, for your personal confidence in yourself. Like constantly working out of the gym. Look, it's hard to go to the gym the first two or three or four nights. It gets easier and easier as you go, and you'll finally feel yourself building muscle, looking different, being different, acting different. The same thing with fear. Bust fear. Be the master, not the slave. Handling people's emotions. Look, when you're faced with a prospect or a client who gets emotional and demonstrates an emotional outburst with you, know that you're getting close to making a deal. Never take a person's emotions personally. Do not react to them, and never become emotional as a response. Look, remember, when you're getting the other person emotional, when they're becoming emotional, you're getting close. Do not quit now. You must know that when people get highly emotional, typically they're getting closer and closer and more interested in actually consummating or making a deal, a transaction. The key is to stay rational, calm, collected when other people are freaking out. Somebody had got to stay calm and persist no matter what is thrown in your way. Emotions are one of those overrated things, kind of like fear. Dude, they're fear is just, oh my God, I can't believe you asked me to do that. This is ridiculous. I cannot believe that. Blah. Like, stay cool. A guy gets angry because your proposal is double his budget. I told you I could only afford. Why is he getting upset with you? Now, really, I mean, if you take a step and look back, is he upset with you or is he upset with himself? Man, I only want to spend $45,000 on a watch or a house or the rent, whatever it is, right? And you show him $65,000 for any of those three items. He's a person trying to buy a house for $45,000, a watch for $45,000, or rent for $45,000. They're all different. And anytime in this person's life, he could be trying to buy those three items. Rent one, buy one, or a watch, right? A house, a watch, a rent, or own, whatever, right? And you're like, these are crazy, man. What are you talking about? A guy renting a house for $45,000? Okay, so he's going to buy the house for $45,000. First house he's ever bought, or he's an investor. He's trying to steal a house for $45,000, or bring him to Star Island. He's trying to rent for $45,000, or one of these condos over here. Same guy goes to buy a watch for $45,000 and in all three cases says, I told you my budget was only... Is he mad at you or mad at himself? Come on, I don't know what it is. I told you. Why is he getting all emotional? Why isn't he staying calm and cool? I'm going to tell you something. The guy that stays rational, hey, man, thanks a lot. I appreciate that. That guy's harder to handle than the emotional. You need that guy to get emotional in many cases. Stay calm, stay cool, stay rational, and know that the outburst will pass once this client comes back to their senses of what they want. Every person wants to make the best decision possible. So when you get him to face up that making a decision to buy your product, know that you might be stirring up his fears and insecurities, and you might be hitting up against his own responsibility levels, like, yeah, man, why am I not in a position yet to buy this? So he gets upset and says to me, I told you not to show me. Is he upset with me or upset with himself because he's not in a position to do this? I'm just trying to show him the right product for him. See, I got to stay calm and cool. Just because he shares his outburst with you and even directs it at you doesn't mean he or she is actually upset with you. Outbursts are usually not at all personal. I mean, even though when they're directed at you, they're just something that every person goes through. I mean, it's just like tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. I got to go through 15 seconds, tick tock, tick tock. And then I got to go through 30. Oh my God. You know, you live with people like this. Why wouldn't you want to sell people like this? You sleep with somebody that gets emotional like this. What do you do? Do you really react to every emotion that your spouse or kids have? Every one of them? You'd go insane. Same thing with a customer, man. Just be cool, be calm, stay rational. I understand, man. I'm with you. I know you told me not to show you. I apologize. It was wrong. I'm bad. My bad. I'll never do that again until the next time. See what I'm doing? Stay rational. You're right, man. You're right. You told me not to show you a watch more than 35. I showed you 45. I went crazy. I lost my mind. It was stupid. My bad. And watch him fall in love. You can't stop the pursuit of closing the sale every time someone gets upset. Just because they're upset doesn't mean it's about you. You must consistently and persistently help them because you are like their expert guide along this tumulus river or this mountain, this hiking adventure or through this jungle, and it's dangerous and you're going through it and they're going through all their little emotions. You would, of course, not stop guiding them through the most dramatic rapids just because you hit some white water and everyone started to freak out. Dude, they went on the ride to freak out, right? Why would a guy go out and look at a house to buy one as an investment? Or there's risk, man. There's risk in everything, and he knows that. So he's going to get emotional. You would benefit if you would just keep everybody calm, including yourself, knowing that the white water will not last forever. And sooner or later, you'll be on the other side. Everything's going to be calm. We're going to go camp out tonight. We're going to burn some marshmallows. Likewise, you want to be the guide. You want to guide the prospect through the sales process, through the dramatic, tough, emotional waters, negotiating into the calm, happy state of them getting what they want, owning their product. It's your duty to help your prospect in this way. Do not get emotional when they do. Practice, drill, and rehearse staying calm when others start freaking. Practice, drill, and rehearse. Be a leader. This is a skill that can be developed, but takes drilling. The biggest problem for most salespeople is they experience someone getting highly emotional and they're thrown back into some unresolved issue of their past when others were being emotional with them. Oh, my papa used to beat me with a belt. Daddy was a drunk and he used to get so noisy at night. He'd get upset. Dude, you're not with daddy. Okay? You're a professional salesperson. Customer got freaked out. You do not need a psychiatrist. No medications necessary. Just be calm. You don't need to go back and relive your childhood. That's not the problem here. Practice being calm. Drill it over and over again. Yeah, I'm with you. I understand. I know that. Until, hey, it's not your papa with his belt that had too many drinks 25 years ago. It's now the customer in front of you. See, you're not practicing. You practiced your poppy so many times. It's not the problem. It's that you haven't practiced a customer in front of you. More times, that is the problem. Stay calm, be cool, learn how to stay calm, and learn how to stay cool. You know, cool don't come to everybody like it does to me. I know some of you got to practice that more than me. Robert over here, he got cool. I mean, he was born with cool. Stay calm, right? Be cool, practice it. Learn how to stay rational when your customers and prospects get emotional. Handling the negative connotations of sales, salespeople, and the sales profession. The only reason that the subject of sales or salespeople has ever carried a negative connotation is because of the inept, unprofessional salespeople who never took time to become true professionals, who took the time to master the craft. That's the only reason salespeople have a bad rap, is because of all these salespeople that never learn how to sell. This lack of self-esteem about the career sales comes from a lack of understanding about how vital salespeople are to the economy and how much difference there is between a professional and an amateur salesperson. A true professional is impervious to negativity because he knows, dude, they're not talking about me. They're talking about the rest of these wankers out here. The true professional is impervious to negative connotations. He is a pro. She is a pro. He or she operates at levels far beyond the charlatan, the actor, the part-time, the amateur. The professional knows that to sales is to serve. And he or she believes so strongly in their product, their service, their company. I met with a guy yesterday. He's representing the Ritz-Carlton Residence in Miami. He's been doing this for 25 years, putting up condo buildings and selling them out. He's like, man, Grant, I don't sell, I serve. I'm like, bro, brother George. I said, selling's not a bad word to me. And he's like, thank you. But Grant, I believe in my product and my company and me so much. I'm like, bro, you've been reading out of my books, bro. Come on, man. The professional knows that to sell is to serve. And he or she believes so strongly in their product, their service, their company, themselves, that the motives that drive that individual are not just about getting a commission. It's about really, truly taking care of somebody. I mean, these people are completely sold on their product. They're drinking the Kool-Aid, swimming in it, using it themselves. A true professional salesperson is motivated by helping others. A true professional salesperson in any field is motivated by that help, is actually admired by all who he or she helps, who or she works with, who they come in contact with, and they're often celebrated by their customers and colleagues alike. You'll see them getting patted on the back. Thanks for selling me that, Robert, man. You really did a good job selling me that. See, they're celebrated. If you feel yourself stymied by the negative connotation of being in sales, look, you need to reconnect to the purpose of what you're doing, the importance of selling as a career, and the development of sales to the entire economy, and you probably need to find some new friends and some new people to hang with. Come hang out with me for a week. I guarantee you won't feel bad about selling when it's done. Reread the introduction of chapter 1 of this book to enlighten your sense of purpose. I personally feel that selling is one of the most noble professions there are, because when done correctly and with the right intentions, okay, with the right motivation, it engenders a very independent, self-reliant, strong, helpful, extroverted individual, even though they were initially possibly introverted, and indeed a person that can operate at higher levels and help in many different ways. A true professional salesperson is able to step into any circumstance, make friends anywhere, help others, calm chaos, and get people to take action. Great salespeople are leaders. They're leaders, man. I mean, the great presidents, they're salespeople. They sold people on ideas. Steve Jobs sold people on ideas. Jesus Christ sold people on ideas. Great salespeople are leaders. They're people who make sense of situations, the big picture, and inspire others to follow with resources and with actions. Think of anyone in your life who has really helped you in your life. Really, really positively affected you and made you feel good about yourself. Dude, that's a salesperson. Write down the 5 qualities that person had that made you feel good about you. What were those qualities? Now write about how each of those qualities would make you a better salesperson. So pick somebody in your life that made you feel better about you. Write down the 5 qualities that they had that made you feel better about you. Always there, followed up. Always talk to me. Always said a nice positive thing about me. Dude, every one of those qualities, dude or do-esses, all those qualities will make you a better salesperson. In my life, I have met some unbelievably exceptional salespeople. I have never, ever, I mean, when they're great, every time I get stopped by them, I'm like, I get enamored by them. Their persistence, their positive attitudes, the skills to listening, the genuine interest, the willingness to accept responsibility, the positiveness, the desire to learn, take interest, to be interesting as well. So many of these things are so attractive attributes, they become inspirational to me. And I think to you. I talked about Gavin, for instance, earlier. I mentioned as a real pro and exceptional, a master of his trade. He's always professionally dressed. Always positive, always patient, always persistent, always listens. He understands. He shows empathy. The guy duplicates my communication extremely well, extremely well. I mean, he knows exactly what I want, duplicates it, tells me this thing might do that. Hey, Grant, you're going to be the one that makes the decision. You always make the right decision. Inspires me, makes me believe I can do the right thing, helps me make sense of it, knows how to use humor, tremendously determined, always there for me, follows up in between sales cycles, focused on his mission, makes it clear that he's on a mission. See, I love these qualities. I could take the qualities that Gavin has and start saying, hey, which one of those would make me a better salesperson? We're different people. See, we're different, but I can use those qualities. And Gavin, you know, I don't look at Gavin with some negative connotation. I see him as a value to me, as a friend. Because of these differences, because of these qualities he has, he could actually pressure me without me feeling bad about it. He's a pro. Become a pro in sales, and people will not have a negative connotation about you. They'll have respect and admiration. No one has a negative connotation about a professional salesperson. It is the amateur who everyone resents in this field. Not having the right response. Grant, I don't know what to say when they say X. Look, in sales, it's good to know what to say. Let's face it, a salesperson's number one tool is his ability to communicate. This is the same reason people are so concerned about public speaking. Oh, what am I going to say? If you knew exactly what you were going to say, exactly what they would say, exactly when they would laugh, exactly what they would ask you, then you'd know exactly what to say. Look, no one wants to stammer. No one wants to hem and haw, freeze up, and not knowing what to say or not do during a presentation is going to cause you to have some sense of anxiety. Communication and the ability to know the right thing to say at the right time is a definite point that counts to your overall professionalism and your success. These days, your customer can be just as informed as you are, sometimes even more so. And that customer expects you to know what you're talking about. Also, your client is likely to have many choices, many, many choices, including, dude, I don't even need to do this. You know, when economies tighten up, the only people you're dealing with are people that have money, and people that have money are like, I don't even need this. Most of the stuff they're buying, they don't need. Also, your client is likely to have many choices that they can compare to their offer. Not just another house, if they're looking at your house, but also, you know, we're going to buy a plane instead. You don't know. Your customer might be going there and saying, I'm not going to buy both of them. You understand what I'm saying? As well as your customer has these financial concerns, more than likely, that you'll have to handle in your value proposition. There'll be times when you don't have an answer to your client's question. That's okay. How you answer is the key. How you answer is always going to be the key, even when you don't know. If you don't know something, you could say, you know what? I never tell somebody I don't know. In fact, I always know. In this case, I don't. It's a great question. Let me get that information for you. And you could drop all that and just say, great question. Let me get that for you. I'll write it down. I'll have it to you within the next 15. Which one's more effective? I don't know or great question? See, how you're going to say things is important. You might think there's not much difference, but I assure you they're completely different. I don't know is different than great question. Let me get the answer to you. The other acknowledges the communication and shows your willingness to serve. Hey, great question. I'll get that for you. Being in a position to know how to respond to anything requires that you continue to brush up constantly on your communication skills and maintain a positive attitude and you still got to know your product knowledge. Selling has similar requirements to public speaking. If you don't know what to say, it won't go well. You know, if you read the book and listen to this audio program, when you read the book, you're going to be like, dude, he's not even on the book. Where's he at in the book? Because I know the book. I know the information in the book, so I can drift and get you a lot more content, many more examples in the audio program because I know the material. Look, selling has very, very similar requirements to public speaking. If you don't know what to say, it's not going to go well. Know your presentation, work it out. Know it so well that it's like, you know, genetically part of you so that you can handle any situation. Also, be prepared for every possible question. If you know what they are, write them down every time you engage with somebody. Every objection, if you don't know what they are, write them down every time you engage with somebody. Every stall, if you don't know what they are, write them down every time you engage with someone. Every obstacle, if you don't know what they are, write them down every time you experience them. Every delay and every question the customer can possibly ask you. You probably already heard them if you've been doing this more than 3 weeks. Every time I hear something new from a client I've never heard before and was not prepared for, I write it down. And then in my private time, I prepare a number of responses that I could use. I debrief every sales experience still today. Remember, you're in a business where communication is your weapon. You can't help anyone if you can't effectively communicate with them. You're in a business where communication is the weapon. You understand? Know how to use this weapon. This requires that you are prepared. It's ready. The weapon's ready. It's sharp. It's concise. It's tight. And it's sensible. And it's logical. And it's non-emotional. And it furthers your cause. And it makes you and your product and your company look professional. I'll never forget a kid who came to my door one day. Door-to-door sales in my neighborhood. I was living back in Los Angeles. Very difficult neighborhood to cold call because the houses are separated. He's got to come up to this big wooden door on the outside. The door goes to a big long hallway up some steps, and then he gets to my front door. Well, he had to buzz outside, and there's a camera. I'll never forget this kid. The kid was so good that I had to let him through the front door. I had to let him through the wooden door to my front door to tell him I wasn't interested at my front door. He was good when I couldn't see him. He was good when I was in front of him. Here I am busy with calls. I got prospects. I'm at a home office. Front door buzzer rings. I'm frustrated. I stop what I'm doing. I answer the phone. It's a cold call. He's pitching household cleaners. Crazy. How tough a gig is that? Well, I got special admiration for anyone who could sell door to door. And I got a super serious admiration for anybody that could communicate the way this kid did. I think it cost me $400 to open the door on some cleaner I never used. I just couldn't shut the door on. Man, look, I don't have time for you, dude, I said. And he says, I understand, boss. Give me 60 seconds to show you what I can do for you. As he's telling me this, he drops to his knees. Immediately drops to his knees. He knows he's going to run out of time with me. He drops to his knees, looks up at me, starts cleaning stains on the stone of the steps as I look down 20 steps. He looks at me and says, I'm out here every day getting doors slammed in my face, just hoping that if I work hard enough, one day I can live in a place like this. I'm like, dude, how much? Next thing you know, I'm giving him $200 for his product. $200 for a product I had no interest in, and gave him another $200 just because I admired him. He had me at boss and a smile when I tried to shut the door in his face, but he closed me because he was prepared. He was ready. He knew how to communicate. He knew how to look me in the eyes. He knew how to get his presentation in a very short period of time, how to demonstrate his product, and then shut me down. He knew how to take advantage of a moment. Be prepared. Know how to communicate. Practice your skills so you can always have a response for every situation. Overwhelmed by a customer's objections. Objections can take place in lots of different places for a salesperson, and they will happen at different places for you. When you're trying to get appointments with the decision maker while presenting your product, you could get it. In the negotiations, you could get objections. In the close, you could get them. You could get them from the gatekeeper, the customer, a decision maker, a non-decision maker. You can get them from a third party that just wants to drop input. Look, there's no substitute for being a ninja, assassin, closing machine. You need to be ready to handle any and all objections. Literally, you need to drill on your downtime. Read, listen, learn, and drill. Drill it over and over and over again. This should be something you prepare constantly on. Make a list of every objection you hear so you are cognizant, aware, you know what you might hear in every situation. And then practice handling all those objections in a manner that gives you confidence so you can assist yourself in making the sale. The Closer Survival Guide that I mentioned earlier, Close the Sale app we talked about, are great resources for providing you with ways to handle objections. That one publication has 125 or 26 closes in it, different closes, responses to objections that will give you something to say, something to do. Grand man, we need to think about it. Excellent, sir. I think that's a great idea. Sign right here. Well, what do you mean? I gave you time to think about it. Thought is instantaneous, sir. Let's do this. Okay? You really have no excuse, sir. Okay? Grant, we need to think about it. Hey, I'm with you. I'm with you. I understand. You're right. See, do you know what to say when they say I need to think about it, or I got to talk to the wife, or we never make a rash decision? What do you say? What are you going to do? Are you going to sit and wait? Oh my God, I don't know what to do. Yeah, you should go talk to your wife. Okay, get back with me. Here's my card. Dude, you don't know what you're doing. Then you're going to sit and make excuses. Look, you have no excuse not to close. Right product, right company, right you. If you refuse to invest the time to prepare, I assure you, you will not have money to invest later on. If you refuse to take the time to prepare as a closer, as somebody can handle objections as a professional, I'm hard selling you now. If you refuse to invest that time and energy in learning, you will not have money to invest later in your career. If you don't invest the time now, you're going to miss deals later. It's really silly when I hear a salesperson say, I don't have time to read a book. I don't have time to listen to this. I don't have time to... Really? I'm busy selling. I'm busy. You know, Warren Buffett spends most of his day not investing. Warren Buffett spends most of his day reading about what he's going to invest in the future, so that when he finally sees the big elephant, he can pull the trigger and not waste his money. Look, you're wasting prospects because you're not ready. You're wasting calls because you don't know what to say. You have to find time to drill, practice, rehearse objections. If you're cold calling on customers, then you've got to practice your pitch over and over and over again. Quit practicing on customers. If you're meeting customers in person, you must quit practicing on these people that are buying from you, or in your case, not buying from you. If you can't find an hour a day, it's because you're not in control of your day. Regardless of how good you are, how much money you make, you know you can get better. If your profession were cutting trees, I guarantee you'd take time to sharpen your saw. If you want to close more deals, make more money, create more sales for yourself and your company, there's no substitute for preparing yourself. If you're overwhelmed by customers' objections ever, even one time, if you're ever overcome by a customer's objections, it is because you're not ready. Keep a diary of every objection you hear and immediately work out how you might handle that or a similar objection in the future. Also, again, refer to the Closer Survival Guide to find an appropriate response. I'm actually currently working on an encyclopedia of closes that will be double the size of this program right here. Because we continue to get people saying, man, you ought to try this close. This close works good. You ought to try this close right here. Grant, this is exceptional. So we start compiling those in an encyclopedia. Then drill each of those responses until they fit your personality and you know them cold. Suppose you hear the objection, I need to check with my wife. Then you'd write it down, look for a solution, and drill it in your own time. If the customer says, I need to talk to my spouse, my response would be, and I know what it is, because I've drilled it up here. I don't need to look for it there. Sir, I understand. Look, if your marriage is anything like my marriage, if your wife is anything like my wife, she knows you're here. In fact, she told you to come. She told you what to look for. She told you what you could afford. She told you what was permissible. Okay? Sign right here. Let's get this done. Hey, man, you're right. She did tell me to come here. You think that's too much and that's too strong and that's too pushy? Maybe you think that. And the only reason you're thinking that right now is because you haven't made this, you haven't tried this, haven't prepared to use this, because I can't tell you. I can't tell you how many hundreds of times I've used that exact situation. Sir, if your wife's anything like my wife, she knows you're here. In fact, she sent you here. She gave you the budget. She told you what was desirable. She told you what was permissible. Sign right here. I trust we're on the right product. Let's do this. Can't tell you how many times that's worked for me. And you're like, oh, no, I could never do that. You don't even have any basis to make that claim. None. Zero. Oh, that wouldn't work. That would work with that product, but not this product. That would work in America, but not in Canada. Oh, that'd work in England, but never over here. You don't even know what you're talking about. Okay? You need tools. You need to not quit. You need to stay in the deal. You need to practice these. I'm assuming that you believe in your product. Remember, I'm assuming you believe in your product. I'm assuming you believe in your company. And whether you live in England, Canada, Africa, Brazil, or Miami, Florida, I'm assuming you believe in your product, you believe in your customer, you believe in your company, you believe in yourself, and you believe the product's good for the customer. Then why wouldn't you stay in the deal right now? Why wouldn't you stay in the deal and get the deal done? Sir, I understand you want to talk to your wife. If your wife's, maybe you're saying this in Latin. Maybe you're saying it in Mandarin, or maybe you're saying it with a different personality and without so much energy, but you're going to be saying this. Sir, I understand you want to talk to your wife. If your wife's anything like my wife, maybe you're saying it like a redneck or a New Yorker, or maybe you're all polished because you're from some other place. I don't know, dude. Say it the way you want to say it, but say something, please. Sir, your wife's anything like my wife, then she probably sent you here. She probably told you what was allowable and permissible and what would fit with their budget, okay? Okay, I'm confident that we're on the right product. I don't have any more money to give you. Sign right here. Let's do this. Look, anyone that needs to talk to their wife, has already actually made a decision. You know what I'm saying? If you need to talk to your wife or your husband to make a decision here today, you've made a decision that your wife and your husband is the one that makes decisions, which means you wouldn't be over here had you not talked to them already. Put that through your head. If you're experiencing getting overwhelmed by the prospects, problems, situations, objections is too much, it's because you're not preparing yourself for the close well enough. Feeling like an idiot. If you've ever had any version of the dream of being in front of a group of people and then realizing you're naked, then you know what it's like to feel like an idiot. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but there you are. You're standing on stage. Your pants are down. Okay. You're caught. People are laughing at you. You feel frozen. Here's the good news. Everyone's fears that they will be exposed one day, somehow caught and somehow shown to be inadequate or unprepared. Look, everybody has this. The word idiot. Oh, I'm going to be an idiot. I'm going to look like an idiot. I'm going to sound like an idiot. I don't want to try that because they're going to think I'm an idiot. Look, the word idiot comes from Latin. It was used to describe a common person who was not educated and not worldly. A common person who's not educated and not worldly. It's a word used to make a person feel bad. Chapter 22, part 3 continues up. Coming next now. Let's hit it. Chapter 22 is part 3, trio, triangular, go for 3.
Feeling like an idiot is just like feeling of not knowing something. Feeling like an idiot is the feeling of insecurity. Oftentimes we even intuitively do know something, but we don't act on it for whatever reason. We just don't do it. You know you should do it. Oh, I can't do that. I'm acting like they're going to think I'm an idiot. It's because you hadn't tried it enough. You hadn't drilled it. Hadn't practiced it. You knew you shouldn't have gone out to that bar that night, but you did it anyway. When you wound up in a bar fight, you felt like an idiot, right? Because you didn't listen to your own instincts. The degree in which you fear feeling like an idiot, this is what people wrote us into, man, I feel like an idiot trying some of this stuff, is the degree which you look to others for your self-worth. Quit trying to get other people to approve of you. If you do something that is idiotic, the best thing you can do is quickly admit it, learn from it, so you can move forward the next time. Look, what I'm saying here is that being an idiot and the fear of looking like an idiot are two different things. I don't know if this makes any sense to you, but I'm telling you, they're different. Fear of looking like an idiot and actually being an idiot, the village idiot, they're a long way apart. Everyone's an idiot at some point. Everybody. I'm an idiot. I was an idiot on the phone this morning. I'm talking to the bank. Okay, Matt, now let me ask you. What did me and you agree on the rate? What fee did we agree on? The guy's like, bro, I've told you this like 5 times. All right. Now I feel like an idiot and I'm acting like an idiot. How much? I didn't want to go back through my notes and find it. You get it? I'm not looking for my self-worth through him. I don't care. It don't matter to me. You need to get to this place where you don't care that you look like an idiot. Okay? Let me tell you what the idiot is the guy coming home with no deals. Daddy, did you sell something today? No, son, I didn't. You an idiot. Get a deal. Look like an idiot if you have to get the deal. Feel like the idiot if you have to. Look, what I'm saying here is do it anyway. Everyone is an idiot at some point in their career, in every endeavor. No matter how good you are, there's going to be something you don't know, something you're not sure about. Great men of ability all started out, I mean, come on, looking a little idiotic until they learned, they practiced, and they became great. Your fear of being an idiot is going to keep you from learning, practicing, and eventually becoming great. I got to practice. I got to drill. I got to rehearse. I got to look like an idiot for a little while. Free yourself from this fear. Decide, dude, I'm willing to look like an idiot. I'm willing to ask the dumb questions. One of the big mistakes people make with social media is, oh, I don't want to post something that looks stupid. Dude, nobody's going to see your post. Okay. I mean, you can pretty much guarantee you're not going to look stupid because nobody even knows you exist in this universe. Don't worry about it. The best thing that could happen to you is enough people would start saying you're acting like an idiot. And that would become some trending event. Free yourself from the fear of this by pursuing your ambitions and being willing to be an idiot. Dude, I'm willing to get what I want. Pursue my ambitions. I'm not worried about being an idiot in the process. In this way, in fact, I just want to say that the people that are most worried about looking bad are the people that are least endeavoring to do great things. It's back to that fear. It's this thing that never happens anyway. And by the way, the people that you look like an idiot to probably aren't going to matter in your life anyway. In this way, you have this rare freedom of being able to stand naked in the face of judgment on the stage, in front of a customer. Look, they're all stages anyway, and you're going to have it. At least you'll have a good time. At least you can have the rest of your life and say, dude, there's some freedom in me enjoying my life and being who I want to be. Meeting new people. Overall, by survey, salespeople feel meeting new people to prospect them is a challenging thing. It's not intuitive. It's not normal. This is usually a symptom, I believe, of thinking small, being brought up conservative, following a contraction plan, actually being educated with a contraction plan, if you've read the 10X rule, instead of being brought up to expand an extrovert. For example, do you know a salesperson who packs his lunch every day? If you ever met an entrepreneur or a salesperson who actually packs their lunch and eats at work every day to save money? Dude, this guy's withdrawing from life. This guy's actually withdrawing. This doesn't make any sense. Now, if this is you that's doing this, I know you're going to take this personal and you're going to defend yourself right now. But the reality is you have no business eating lunch with yourself. I know you think it saves you money, but the truth is it's costing you millions to eat by yourself. You should be eating with your clients. You're not doing this because it's smart. You're doing this because you were taught to do this. Look, if you're a contractor, okay, or if you're hammering nails into houses or putting roofs on or plumbing in and you bring your lunch to work to eat, you know, to eat out of a brown bag for 45 minutes, that might make sense. If you're a salesperson and you eat by yourself, the only thing that makes sense about that is you need to go find a hammer and start building houses, not selling them. The solution to meeting new people and prospects is to reach way out. Think expansive, not contractive. Where can I go today? Who can I go eat lunch with? Who can I go eat breakfast with? Where can I be seen today? Where can I go in the course of my day to be seen, be talked about, and possibly get lucky? Get out there. Go to lunch. Not with another salesperson, but with a customer. How can I get busy? How can I be seen? He's not buying anything. Why would I take him to lunch? Look, why would I take another salesperson to lunch? More importantly, why would I go to lunch with myself? I'm not going to buy anything for myself. Hey, how about the endless list? Go to the gym. Go to the restaurant. Go to the city council. How about church? How about convention? What about getting involved in a multi-level marketing company? They only meet 2 and 3 times a week. Industry trade shows. How about I take a new class? How about I go, wow, my gosh, the list is endless. Do you have a list? Do you know where you're going this week? How many outings will you go to this week to meet new people? Have you ever once in your lifetime sold a client at lunch in your office out of your paper bag? Have you ever sold a client by staying in bed at your house? Have you ever sold a client by mowing your own lawn? Have you ever met a new person washing your own car, vacuuming it out, being the maid at your house? Probably not. You got a better chance of going to the grocery store and shopping for groceries and actually meeting somebody in the line because you're out. The point is, look, man, you got to meet new people. The possibilities are endless. If you're actually involved in living life, the possibilities become endless. There's only 7+ billion people on this planet. You can't even meet everybody in your own zip code. The first step is to commit to getting out among the people. Get out. Ain't no money in your living room. Your dreams will not come true. Nobody's going to bring them to your front door. Nobody's going to bring them to your living room and say, boom, here's your dreams. Package ready, open. The second step is to figure out how to establish communication when you're out with people you meet. They don't teach you this in schools. Okay. This is straight out of how do I fill my pipeline? How do I become first, not last in a customer's mind? I don't care whether you're selling art, you're an artist, you're selling investors on investing in a movie, you're doing a new technology or website or social media platform like ShowPitch, or you're the next Twitter, okay? Or you're creating a piece of hard technology or some cloud type based technology. You got to meet new people that might be interested in your project. And the easiest way for you and me to meet and develop relationships is to visit the same place over and over until I know everybody in that cycle. You don't want to spot places. You don't want to keep going to different places all the time. The first thing I would tell you to do is have some success by going to the same place over and over and over again until you know everybody there. Then move to another spot. If you take notice of something you have in common with others and are familiar with the space, you're going to see the communication start to go up. Also, asking people for help is a great way to get communication flowing. Hey, I'm new to the area. Like when I moved to Miami, first thing I do is contact some people here. You know, hey, I'm new to Miami. Everybody wanted to help me. Boom, the line was perfect. I'm new to Miami. I'm just moving in from LA. I'd like to get involved in helping other groups. What's your charity? Oh, by the way, I understand you're involved in this party. I'd like to help out there. Bang! Immediately invited to something. Was that difficult? Oh, Grant, it's so easy for you, Grant. It's so easy for you, Grant, because you're so extroverted. None of this is easy for anybody. This is hard for everybody. You're an introvert until you extrovert. Look, asking for help is just a simple way of mentioning the fact that you need help, or, hey, I like your shoes, or I like your blouse, or I like your purse, or, hey, do you know where I can find the best coffee, or I might post on Facebook, hey, what's the best green tea? You'll see me do this every day on facebook.com/CardoneSuccess. You'll see me get involvement from people and make new friends. What's your favorite color for a book? What would you think for the best title? Look, it doesn't matter what you're selling. I don't care if you're selling $10 products or $100 million real estate. All the commercial real estate brokers in the world are underutilizing the technology available to meet new people, make new friends, and get people talking about them. Meet new people. The way to do it today is different than the way you did it yesterday. But that doesn't exclude the ways of yesterday, like go and sit down in a restaurant, have a cup of coffee at the same place over and over, and then go to your office and post on their Facebook page, your Twitter account, LinkedIn, or whatever the next phenomenon is going to be. Look, a person might be wearing a nice pair of sunglasses you like, or they're driving a car that you admire. Man, that's a nice car you got. Wow, man, where'd you get it? Do you like it? I saw an ad on it. Take interest in people. You're meeting people. If you're in a restaurant, you can even admire the dish the person at the table next to you ordered. The point is, it's endless once you make a commitment. You could ask somebody next to you, how much money you make? What's it like to work here? How long have you lived? It doesn't matter. It's an endless list. But if you don't make a commitment to it, you won't ask those things. Meeting new people. Be interested in others. Communicate about anything. Reach out by being seen. Make contact. Be willing to be the idiot. And watch your pipelines fill up. Breaking ice. It's always the salesperson's duty to break the ice when establishing a relationship. Particularly if you work in a retail environment and people are coming to you. You got to break ice. You got to break the ice. Got to get people comfortable. Customers have not called you or driven to your company or your place or location or agreed to an appointment because they're not interested in you and your product. Look, if you're going to help customers get what they want, you need to get to know them. At some point, I have to know what they want. Sometimes just breaking ice is a bit uncomfortable, that first little thing, for everyone, them and you. Hey, the more you do that, the more comfortable you'll become, the more you'll believe in what you're doing, and the less of an issue it will become. Many times your prospective clients are guarded, they're defensive, you know, particularly when they're shopping, maybe for the first time, never been in your space, when you're calling on them due to you going to them or some previous experience with salespeople, they're uncomfortable. You need to know how to approach a prospect, to how to make them feel welcome quickly, how to put them at ease without turning them off, without sounding salesy, and how to make them feel like you're not pouncing on them and or they're not obligated to spend a bunch of time with you. It's simpler than you think. Look, approach the prospect. Do not wait for the customer to approach you. Smile. Thank the person for their time. Hey, I want to really tell you thank you for your time. Thanks for coming to see me, or thanks for, you know, making the time to see me. 3, stick out your hand. Introduce yourself. My name is. I would encourage you to use one name. My name's Cardone, or my name's Grant. One name, not two. Keep your hand out. By the way, a name badge would be a smart thing. Keep your hand out until the person actually shakes your hand. Make physical contact when you can, as it breaks the physical boundary. Smile, keep smiling, and keep smiling, regardless of their attitude. Whatever they say, agree with them. And once that communication line has been established, immediately move into explaining what your goal or purpose is with the time the person's given you. Once you break the ice, look, do not spend 30 minutes building rapport. Do not waste time, 5, 6, 7 minutes, talking about them and their family. All that will happen basically organically later on. There's always time for that building rapport for later. Break the ice. Before you present your product or company, take interest in the client by finding out what problem they're trying to solve. Why did you agree to see me today? What are you looking to solve? What problem are you looking to solve? If you could solve one problem, what would it be? Okay. Have you ever done something similar like this in the past? Did you like it or not like it? See, I'm taking all interest in them and what they want. What will happen is this common ground, this rapport building thing that salespeople think is so priceless will happen on its own. If the customer agreed to see you or agreed to come see you, they have a problem they're trying to solve. Trust me. Learn how to break ice. Everybody can, baby. How do you stay motivated? One of the questions I get from a lot of people of all industries, from all walks of life and all careers and all ages, how to stay motivated when you don't feel like you're getting anywhere. Look, this is not a unique problem. And I assure you that I have experienced it personally myself many, many times in my career, thousands of times. This is not a unique problem to salespeople. Certainly, it's a universal challenge experienced by anyone trying to accomplish any goal. So the fact that you're not motivated, maybe today at this very moment, and struggling with how to get motivated when you're not getting anywhere, suggests you're trying to get somewhere. Whether you're trying to make a big sale, trying to lose a few pounds, training for a marathon, learning a new language, trying to get the right girl, the right guy, you're having disappointments, you're having failures, you're trying to grow your business and it's not getting there. Look, at least you're trying to, you know, acquire some worthwhile aim. And disappointments and failures are going to come. The key to success is knowing how to stay motivated. Yeah, the key to success is knowing how to stay motivated when you don't, when you're hitting barriers, when you're hitting stops, when things aren't going your way, when things are just not quite what you'd hoped for, planned, or budgeted. How do you stay excited when you're getting whacked all day long? The number one way for me to do that, to stay motivated, is to stay busy. Moving quickly from one activity to another with lots of stuff in between. Okay. So literally, I mean, people in my office will see me moving from one thing to the other. I jump in, I grab some lunch. We took a break here. I jump in there, grab some lunch. I do 4 phone calls while I'm throwing garbage in my mouth, food in my mouth. Okay. I grab something to eat. Robert comes up to me. He's done with lunch. He's like, let's go. I run back in here. I take another phone call, interrupts our deal. Dude, I stay busy. See, if I stay busy enough, you know, it's like if the grass grows tight enough, the weeds have trouble coming through. The weeds are still there. I know they're down there. I know there's little creatures down there and worms and all the negative little things in life, the doubts, insecurities. But look, if I can get that turf thick enough, if I can get my schedule thick enough, it's less of that stuff's going to grow in. It's not going to get a life. So here I am negotiating a deal, recording this audio program, keeping it tight, completely 2 different businesses. And a lot of people are like, how can you do all that stuff? Well, no, I do all this stuff for survival because it keeps me excited and motivated. It keeps me busy. You know the old adage? Hey, is that glass half empty or half full? I don't know. Is it really, if you look at it, is it half empty or is it half full? That's the question. Look, the reality is if you're moving fast enough, you wouldn't even take the time to consider half empty or half full. You'd be like, I'm thirsty. I'm drinking, baby. I don't care if it's half empty, half full. Look, if you want to be a teacher and be in philosophy, then you need to get out of sales and get out of business and go be a teacher. This isn't philosophy. Real life is not philosophy. It's getting out of the big white tower and getting into the marketplace. And the way I stay motivated is I stay busy. Okay. The way I keep my relationship fresh with my wife is keep it busy. You know, the way me and her get along the best is when we're both working on our careers in the same direction, keeping things going, and then we're not focusing on each other's outpoints. My motivation comes from my attention to the future, not from something done in the past. When I'm moving on to the next thing, I don't have time to get sucked into focusing on all the stuff I did wrong today, yesterday, last week, all the mistakes I made. I'm not even thinking about it. You know why? Because I'm busy again. See, most people are just not busy enough. They're not busy enough. Like they're not hammering, doing different things enough. When I'm moving on to the next thing, when you start moving on to the next thing and the next thing, you don't have time to get sucked into what went wrong. Instead, you'll have time to concentrate on what to do next. What's up next? What am I scared of next? I believe a lot of depression is actually a mislabeling of inactivity. Now look, I'm not a doctor. I haven't done any analysts on this, and I don't think the people that actually call people depressant do any analyzing or studies or urine tests. So they're probably no more expert than I am, but I see a lot of people depressed because they're not active enough. They're not in the game. If there's a fire in your kitchen, I assure you right now, just imagine you're sitting on the sofa, you feel a little depressed, you're in your office a little depressed, and all of a sudden there's a fire in your kitchen. Guarantee you, okay? smoke, fire, heat, sirens going off, depression will not be your issue. You will get busy. All of a sudden, your legs will work, your feet will work, okay? Your pump will be freaking, and you'll be like, I got to run, dog. I got to run. I got to put a fire out. I got to get busy. I got to do something. What just happened? You were motivated. Motivated to produce. Motivated to get a product. Either get your ass out of the apartment that's burning down or put the fire out. One of the two. But you got productive. You were motivated. See? Urgency. Something to do. Some goal. Something to escape. Somewhere to go. Reduce short period of time. Urgency. See, you'd be consumed in that moment, not by the fire. You're going to be consumed, not by your depression. You're going to be consumed with an object, a target, a deadline. I got to put this fire out. Or you're going to watch your house burn down. You might be depressed later, but not while it's happening. And the only way you'd be depressed later is if you don't get busy rebuilding this house or this office or this kitchen or whatever. You get it? Simple, man. Stay busy. The way to stay motivated is to stay busy. The other thing, oh, by the way, people will hate this about you. People that are living average lifestyles, you know, putting in average amounts of activity will hate you for adopting this way of life. The other thing about staying motivated is you need to stay away from the bad news and the doomsayers. I talked about this in earlier chapters. Their goal, look, the media, O'Reilly, Piers Morgan, who doesn't even live in this country but reports the news for this country, all the media people, all the talking faces, look, their goal is to share bad news and doomsday scenarios. Anderson Cooper, you know, he goes from catastrophe to catastrophe. Can't wait till they get there. Give me a ticket. Get me over there fast as possible. Their goal is to drag you down. And don't kid yourself. I'm not over pitching this. Their goal is to drag you down and make sense of where you live and make you feel good about it by giving you 2 minutes of how your life is better than the rest of the world. And 2 minutes of some little funny tidbit that, I like him. With the goal of keeping you on that sofa, in that chair, not feeling good about yourself, about your company, about the future, about the economy, and uncertain. They will only leave you feeling like more of a failure, more hopeless, just a little better off than the rest of the people. The world's coming to an end, more apathetic about taking action. And no wonder people aren't motivated, man. Instead, stay positive. Keep connected to people on your team. Don't find time for TV. Be so busy. Like, man, I haven't watched my favorite show in 6 weeks. And it's sitting on TiVo recorded or sitting on Netflix. And that's the kind of problems you want. You miss your favorite show because you're so freaking busy. Instead, stay positive. Keep connected to people on your team. If you don't have a team, get one. In your group, if you don't have a good, strong group, get it. And get connected to training, motivation. I know all this sounds like la 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 la. Dude, it's not la la. What you surround yourself with is how you're going to think. Want to stay motivated? Don't get motivated. Stay motivated by surrounding yourself in an environment that is motivational. And stay busy. Starting over with new clients. Look, making a brand, making a new start will cause anxiety and uncertainty. If you're completely certain about it, look, if it was that easy, everybody would do it and you wouldn't even have space to. If you're starting over with a new product or a new company, or you need to get back to square one, because the reality is, look, we're all starting over. A guy called me the other day, man, I'm starting over my career. Bro, big deal. I mean, I start over every day, okay? Sometimes I start over 2 and 3 times a day. Oh, yeah, but I'm starting a new deal. Yeah, that's not a big deal. I start over every day. You should be thinking fresh like that. If you're starting over with a new product or a new company and need to get back to square one, it can cause you to feel like you're defeated or a zero. If you've ever heard that hero to zero, I went there, lost it all, had to start over. Or I had a good month and now I got to start over at zero. Well, don't think like that. Think you're starting fresh all the time. When you find yourself in this situation, the thing to do is maybe make a plan. And more important, get into action. If you're starting over, you've already been at the beginning point and gotten past it. Grant, I'm starting over. Okay, well, that's something you already did, bro. That's not something you're going to do. Right? Well, what do you mean? No, I'm starting over. Uh-huh. Yeah. When did you start over? That's not something you're going to do. That's something you've already done. Check it out. Guy just lost his job. Rob loses his job. Rob now says, oh, I got to start over and go find another job. No, bro, you don't need to go start over. You already started over. When you lost your job, you started over. You were starting over when you lost your job. And by the way, you already got a job. You're the only one that doesn't know it. What job is that? Your new job is to find a new job. See, you're always employed, folks. How are you going to think about this? How are you going to approach it? Look, make your prospect list for a new startup. Work your power base for a new startup. Get your speed on with your new product and your new service. Better to go to market fast with mistakes than to go to market slow and never get there. Get into action. The faster you start presenting your pitch, getting interest, building your pipeline, the quicker you will work your way out of the condition of being unknown and brand new. But you're not starting over. You're just not known now for this new thing. Get your name, your product, your message outright to everyone, outright into the public. To everyone, don't wait to become an expert.